WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Well, good morning and welcome to Money Matters right here. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Also, KRMG Radio in Tulsa. Good morning, folks. It's official. Social Security is actually changing. When we were on the air last week, we were speculating that there would be a change. There's a bill on the desk of the president to be signed, and that bill included in it significant changes to Social Security. And this week, of course, That bill was signed. Now that bill is law. Now those changes are actually happening. There are changes coming to your Social Security benefits. And I'm going to break that down today with really the same understanding as we had last week. But this week we had an awful lot of time to process this. And we answered probably 100 some questions from our audience about, hey, I'm in this particular situation. How does this apply to me? And there's obviously a little fear around this because we know we rely in this country very heavily on Social Security. A third of Americans rely 100% on Social Security. The other two thirds, it's still important. I don't care if you have $1 million or $2 million, you have a Social Security payment that's $2,500 a month, which is a high Social Security payment. The average in America is about $1,350 per person. But if you're someone, and I've seen Social Security payments that are over $3,000 a month per individual, and that's partially if you earn close to the Social Security maximum for a lot of years. It's also partially if you waited beyond 62 to 66 and maybe even 70. There's so many variables that you can adjust, or not adjust, there's so many variables that will impact how much you get every month that everyone's Social Security payment's a little bit different, and how we collect is a little bit different, and that's what these laws are impacting. If you have specific questions on how this impacts you, we are here this morning to take those calls and those questions. Also, so the number here in the studio, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Also, there were significant economic developments this week. The jobs report wasn't bad, wasn't good, it was great. We added 271,000 jobs for this past month, October, kind of a blowout payroll. Unemployment rate now has fallen all the way to 5%, 5.0%. So we're almost underneath what is already historically a very low unemployment rate. Whether you agree it's the right jobs, the wrong jobs, there's part-time, there's the U6, which are the underemployed, you can make all the arguments in the world, but the headline unemployment rate that the Federal Reserve watches and is a huge variable whether they raise interest rates or not is getting better and better. And it's at the point after this Friday's job report that the Fed's not going to stay on hold anymore. The Fed fund futures, that actually it's a market driven way to look and see if the Fed is going to act or not, shows that a 70% plus chance that the Fed's going to actually move in their December meeting. So to some extent at this point, unless we get some shockingly bad economic data, which could happen, we're going to see the Fed finally move this December. And what happened on Friday? Well, market was up a little bit. In fact, we had a decent week in the market. Dow is actually now up on the year a fraction of a percent for the year. Dow Jones up 0.49, S&P 500 up 1.96. After about a 1% up move this week for the S&P, about a 1.4% up move for the Dow. But Friday really kind of calmed the equity markets down, maybe putting a lid on equity markets for a little while. Why? Because now we know rates are going up and higher interest rates is effectively a headwind for pretty much everything. But what got hit on Friday, and we've seen this same story unfold, play out several times over the last several years. Every time we think the Fed is about to act because we get strong economic numbers, and we say, well, the Fed's obviously going to act at the next meeting and rates are going up. IRSAs, I've been calling them for the last couple of years, interest rate sensitive areas, were down on Friday. So anything that is competing with interest rates or bonds can go, took a hit on Friday. So you saw utilities go down. We saw bonds go down. We saw all the corporate bonds, government bonds, high yield bonds, all taking some shine off of their value because higher interest rates means, hey, treasuries pay more and there's more competition now to buy a tax or a risk-free asset like a treasury relative to an asset that has some underlying risk to it like a utility or a real estate investment trust or anything that you own for in large part for the income, the steady income. Now, it doesn't mean these instruments or these investment vehicles are bad at all. It just means that we're going through this cycle of adjustment, and we've prepared for this for many years now. We all know, and if you've been listening to Money Matters, that when rates start going up, there's going to be a period of time where you feel those speed bumps as investors. There's no way to have interest rates start ratcheting up as opposed to the expectation of them ratcheting up. They're actually going to happen. You're going to see utilities suffer a little bit for a while. You're going to see REITs pull back a little bit. You're going to see most bonds, particularly intermediate and long-term bonds, probably go down a little bit in value, in price. And we know that's coming. We know that's happening. It doesn't mean, though, that every single interest rate product you have or interest rate sensitive investment is bad. It just means that anything that's really long-term, particularly long-term bonds, are going to have a really strong headwind. And that's what we have to prepare for. So again, we can answer questions about that today. 404-872-0750 is the number here in the studio. Again, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I also want to talk about the future of jobs in America. I know that if you're a parent or a grandparent, you've wondered at some point in your life, in the last few years, every time you hear about some new technology product or you hear about Amazon, which is now larger than Walmart with 90% less jobs, okay, workforce 90% smaller, company now a greater market capitalization, you wonder to yourself, what are my kids going to do when they grow up? What are my grandkids going to do when they grow up? Does everyone need to be a programmer? Does everyone need to design the next iPad, iPhone, iPod? Or in order to have a job, you wonder about the economy that we live in. Is it getting so rapidly technologically advanced? Are there still going to be the same amount of jobs there in the future? And what do those jobs look like? That's a concern that I have had for many years now. And that concern grows the more kids I have. And I've got three of them right now and a fourth on the way. So I know that that one that's not even here yet, that's supposed to arrive, we have a due date, Valentine's Day of 2016. In 20 years, that child will only be 20 years old, barely entering the workforce. What are things going to be like 2 decades away? So I want to address that today. So there's a lot to talk about here on Money Matters. And of course, get your calls and questions. 404-872-0750. We're going to go straight to Lee, who joins us from Cleveland. Maybe Cleveland, Georgia, maybe Cleveland, Ohio. Either way, Lee's on the phone here on Money Matters. How can we help, Lee?
Hey, it was Cleveland, Georgia.
Okay.
Back in the 90s, I tried to rescind my Social Security number because I thought it was for sure the mark of the beast. And they told me that I could do that, but I would have to put my Social Security into an unnamed fund and never be able to collect it. Well, thankfully, I didn't do that.
Sounds a little scary to an already slightly shaky program.
Yeah.
So you didn't do it. So now how old are you and what's going on now with social? Are you collecting and how old are you?
I'm collecting and I'm 68. And of course, right now I have a reduced check because I still worked up until last August. So they had to collect funds I initially got. And so I'm wondering what will happen to me, my check now.
Well, okay. So you're already collecting, Lee.
Yes.
And have you done anything where you're not collecting on a spouse's social, you're not doing anything except own Social Security?
No.
You're 68 years old?
Yes.
There should be no change whatsoever to your Social Security from these new laws. There should be no change whatsoever. The only impact that I could see is that unless you do what's called a already collecting your benefits, you should be grandfathered in as long as you are. You've turned 66 by May 2nd of 2016. That's the date. So it's basically 6 months from the enactment of the legislation. You should be grandfathered in. And if you wanted to, you could. Now, you can't do this, but let's say, and this applies to a lot of people that are maybe listening, Lee. If you had suspended those benefits at 66, so 2 years ago, you went to social and said, hey, I know that I can collect, but I'm going to wait while right. that grows. You could still go back to them right now and exercise the what's called the retroactive lump sum option, where you go back to them and you say, hey, I want to, it was a mistake for me to suspend. I haven't collected my, let's call it $2,000 a month for the last 2 years. That'd be $24,000 a year. That'd be $48,000. You go back to them and say, hey, guys, I want my money. And they'll say, okay, here's your $48,000. They won't give you an increase in your benefit.
Uh-huh.
Moving forward, but you can retroactively say, hey, I wish I started taking that. You can still do that at your age. Now, if you don't turn 66 by May 2nd of 2016, so effectively anyone who's 55 and a half and under, that is one major option that is going away for that group. The ability to take a lump sum option, that group, that part is going away. But from Lee from Cleveland,
okay.
This should not impact you from what I can tell in the legislation. Again, there's always nuances that we'll update you on when we learn. But everything I can tell at your age range here, there should be zero impact to the downside on Social Security for you at all. You are listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, certified financial planner here every Sunday morning, right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB and KRMG Radio in Tulsa.
We'll cover breaking news, Kirk Mellis weather, and traffic red alerts throughout the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. Let's go to the phones here. Linda joins us on the line. Hey, Linda, good morning. How can we help this morning?
Good morning. I have a question about my 19-year-old grandson. I am a Vanguard investor. I'm a mutual fund lover. And he works. He goes to college and he works. And we want to start him out with a Roth IRA. And I'm wondering what you might suggest. If is he too young for a target retirement date fund, or, you know, something like a Vanguard Wellesley income fund where, you know, it's more stocks than bonds, but yet there's still a mix? What would you recommend?
So, yes, I do think he is too young for that.
Oh,
because I
okay.
think, so a couple of thoughts. You're thinking of, Wellesley is really 60% in bonds and only about 40% in stocks. So that fund in particular is a pretty conservative fund.
Oh, okay.
So that's a really conservative. You're thinking of Wellington.
There you go.
And Wellington's about 65% stocks, 35% bonds, both too conservative for a 19-year-old. And the target date funds, I'm not a believer in those for somebody that young either. Here's where I would look.
Okay.
I would start, and this is a simple way to look at it, but a really powerful vehicle for anybody, any long-term investor, particularly a teenager or somebody in their 20s. Look at Vanguard Total Stock Market, which is different than, it's not the Vanguard 500, it's the Vanguard Total Stock Market, which effectively looks at every stock in the United States. It's 99% US. You can own it as a fund or an ETF. The ETF is Victor Tango Indigo, VTI, and you're gonna get 3,805 stocks in that one fund. And again, it's going to be, it's very much market cap sensitive. So what are they going to be the top holdings right now? Apple, Microsoft, Exxon, Johnson & Johnson, General Electric, Berkshire Hathaway, Wells Fargo, AT&T, Procter & Gamble. So you're going to get Facebook, one of the top holdings, because it's a gigantic company. So you're 19-year-old grandson is going to get exposure to really these big, well-known brand names in the United States, and then thousands of other companies that you and I have probably never even heard of because they're on the smaller cap side, And that means they're a little more volatile, but maybe even that means they have a little bit more growth over time. That's something that somebody young that has a really long time horizon needs to look at. You are listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. Find me and the Money Matters team at wesmoss.com. Contact button on the left. Those questions come right to me and the Money Matters team. Straight ahead, more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 and KRMG Tulsa Radio.
Here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
We're on. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Good morning. We're going to talk about aging here. This is a fun topic, and you're going to like this topic. And I'd love to hear your feedback once you hear what I'm about to talk about here. Then this is a study. I'm going to put this on. If you don't buy this, you don't buy what I'm selling you here, you're going to have to blame Yale School of Public Health. That's where this is coming from. Wall Street Journal had a huge article about this a couple of weeks ago, and I really have wanted to talk about this because Social Security changes kind of trumped that, and the headline has been so big, and I will still answer questions about Social Security, how this all the brand new laws and the changes coming to Social Security in the next 6 months are going to impact you. I'm sure we'll be answering questions about that for the next year, probably the next 5 years, because Social Security is so complicated that 300 million people can't all understand it. I will say this one thing before we jump to how you feel about aging or how you can change the way you feel about aging. Remember that the Social Security Optimizer calculator that we launched on our website a couple of months ago is still totally relevant. And James, correct me if I'm wrong here, our Social Security Optimizer is still relevant if you are 62 and up. Yes, 62 and up, our Social Security Optimizer is completely on target. So you can still look through the option. And again, the reason being is many of the same options that you have been able to do are going to be grandfathered in if you're 66 or 62. So you can still run the Social Security Optimizer. One note about Social Security before we get to about aging is that if you are one of those people that are waiting to collect a higher Social, so you remember you turn 66 and you say, you know what, I'm just doing nothing. I'm not going to go in and file. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to keep waiting because I know that every year I wait, my benefit goes up by 8%. You've read about it. You've heard me talk about it. You say, you know what, I'm just going to wait. 67, maybe it'll be 68 before I do it. Maybe it's 69. Maybe it'll be 70. The one thing, because of these new laws, you have to still acknowledge that you have suspended your benefits in order to be grandfathered in on all the optionality you have with Social Security. So the whole lump sum optionality, you can still do that, but you've got to go in there and go in person and suspend your benefits as opposed to just doing nothing. You got to go in there and suspend your benefit to allow these options that are so important that are going away to still be grandfathered in. So that is one. And we had some clients this week, we talked about that. They were just waiting. We said, look, go in and at least suspend your benefit so that you still have that optionality to collect a lump sum in a year or two or three if you want to. If you want to still do the file restricted suspend on your spouse's benefit while year grows. Again, still do that, but you've got to get it grandfathered in. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. Also, 1-800-WSB-TALK, live here in the studio. It's almost like there's still breaking news about Social Security. Brand new just this week, changes coming to Social Security. You've got to understand them. We'll continue to talk about that here on the show and answer specific questions. The more questions we get about it, the more nuances and the different angles that you come at us with, the better informed our audience will be, because it's impossible for us to recreate every single scenario. It's really helpful when we get questions from you and we can talk that through and we can say, hey, this relates to 72,000 people that are listening right now. Oh, this question relates to 42,000 people that are listening right now. So that's the wonderful part about what we do here on Money Matters. That's the fun part, we think. as you throw us curveballs and we answer those curveballs, it's very, very helpful to our listener base. Now, with that, I want to talk about aging here a little bit. Again, this is the survey data was collected from Gallup Healthways, written up in the Wall Street Journal. This is a survey of a little over 85,000 adults. So this is not some small sample set. This is 85,000 adults. It's how your perception about getting old is probably just plain wrong. And that if you have these negative misconceptions about getting older, they can end up being a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I've studied a great deal the relationship between money and happiness and how happiness is related to economic security. So I'm always fascinated when I get new data about this topic that I've been so interested in. Again, it's a huge part of my book, You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think. It's about money and happiness and how those two ideas relate to each other, the habits of happy retirees. We've talked about that for the last year and a half now. What do happy retirees do differently over the course of their life to get to retirement a little sooner? It's a huge theme of my book, You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think. It's the 5 money secrets of the happiest retirees. And they're really important. There's 18, what I believe, really important traits that we all need to understand. And the sooner we understand them, better. If we're 30, you should understand them. If you're 50, you should understand them. So these are ideas that I'm a big believer in. And part of this goes back to how we feel when we get a little bit older, as we continue to age. The genesis of this research is understanding how we feel and how our misconceptions can either positively or negatively impact the reality of our world as we age. So the perception, and this is what's so fascinating, I think it's, and this is good, this is really good news, is that the perception about getting old is actually way worse than actually getting old. That means that you have some say-so here. You have the ability to change this if you have some of these negative inferences about getting old. So here's another thought that's exciting to me. The older you get, the younger you actually feel on average. So age is typically associated with all this bad stuff. I remember just reading this article and then meeting with someone who was kind of limping up the stairs and said, "Gosh, you know, getting old stinks. You've heard this. Getting old isn't for sissies." And I get that, and it's not. The older I get, the more I realize that. But consider the following. Let's look at the percentage of people who said they were thriving. That's thriving in these following categories as they age compared to younger generations. So socially, having supportive relationships. If you look at the age 30 to 44 group, how many people said they were thriving socially? Well, 36% did. When you get to age 65, what was that percentage? That percentage almost doubled. Over 53% of the respondent group, age 65 plus, said they had thriving supportive social relationships. That's good news to me. So the older you get, the better your relationships get. And I can totally buy into this one. I get that one. That one I agree with. Okay, how about financially? Managing your economic life to reduce stress and increase financial security. In the group, 30 to 44 year olds, only 30% reported that they were thriving. In the 65 plus group, 62% said they were thriving. So with all our dour money statistics, and I'm guilty of this, I love getting these scary retirement stats that I read. There's an article every week about them. These are people about stories about people barely have two nickels to rub together when they hit age 62. But maybe there's some merit to this one about, hey, by the time you're 65, you've adjusted your lifestyle. You've adjusted your lifestyle to the exact financial position you know that you'll be in. And you're more likely to be comfortable and at peace with this. So again, I'd say this category makes some sense to me. Community, loving where you live. How about this? 30 to 44 year olds, 34% of that group says they love where they live. Thriving, remember? Well, the age 65 plus, over 53% of the 65 plus group loves where they live. So we like where we live and who we live around more and more as we age. So again, this here is a good thing. And the categories continue here, health and energy, physical, a lot. And this was fascinating to me that in a lot of these categories, we're far better off in the future than we think we will be. And again, this is a visiting professor at Duke, and I'll give a pass to anybody at Duke, even though I can't stand that place, being a Tar Heel. I can't take anything away from them academically. We know it's a wonderful school. So this is a visiting professor in psychology and neuroscience. Also, Becca Levy, who's associate professor of epidemiology and psychology at the Yale School of Public Health, and the author of this Yale study, showed that people that are subliminally exposed to positive messages about aging showed long-term improvements in self-image and strength and balance. I guess these are ways to measure this. And if you take, and again, these are all similar groups of similar health, similar education levels, similar socioeconomic status. And those with more negative outlooks show very real life declines faster than those with positive outlooks. So they had shakier handwriting, they had poorer memories, they had higher rates of cardiac issues. Again, they can't make this stuff up. They even die younger, 7.5 years younger, if you just have a negative outlook about aging. Here's an example. If your age, when in the category age 18 to 64, we call that the young group, 64 older was the more retired group, 57% of that group expects that they're going to have some sort of memory loss when they get to be 65, when in reality, only 25% of that group actually experiences this. So again, the perceptions are very skewed to reality. And that's the good news here, is because we can change our perceptions about how aging is or will be, and ultimately it becomes a positive self-fulfilling prophecy. So that's something we're going to continue to integrate here and work on here on Money Matters. I know we have lots of calls. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We will get to those calls straight ahead. You're listening to Money Matters right here on KRMG Radio in Tulsa and News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now back to Wes Moss with the money and investing advice you need.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Let's go straight to the phones here. 404-872-0750. Patricia joins us on the line. Good morning, Patricia. What's going on? How can we help? Patricia, hey, you're on the radio. Good morning. How can we help? Can you hear me? You know what? There we go. I think Patricia doesn't quite understand that. We actually go to these phone calls when people call. There she goes. Patricia, now can you hear me? Well, maybe not. She was nervous to ask about Social Security. Where else are we going? Where else are we headed here? 404-872-0750. Katie joins us on the line. Katie, good morning. Welcome good to Money Matters. How can we help? What's going on?
Well, thank you for taking my call. And I really am looking forward to hearing more about the positive thinking as you grow older. But for today,
I have a question about Social Security.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, my husband just turned 65 last Sunday, so this doesn't apply to him. But for some of my friends, they're still working in that and are over 66. But should they be going in and signing up and, you know, doing that waiting or, you know.
Oh, the suspending. This is exactly why we take questions here, because these are things that I hadn't thought about. This is a perfect example. If your friends are still working and they're 66, yeah. And again, when you're working, you don't think to go ahead and file for Social Security because you think, hey, I'm going to when I stop working, then I'll go and then I'll file and then I'll start collecting. But this is a perfect example. If you're still working and you're 66, then you absolutely want to go into Social Security, go into an office and file for your benefits, but suspend them if you don't need to take the money right away. And if you're still working, you can make a case once you're 66 to do both, earn a living and take social. In a lot of cases, if you have a pretty decent income and you're already in a pretty high tax bracket, it really does make a lot of sense to wait to collect. You don't need to do both at the same time, meaning working and collect Social Security. So I typically see that it's a good strategy, typically.
Okay.
Let's say you retire at 67. You can file and suspend at 66. So you go in, you acknowledge, hey, I'm going to collect, but I'm going to collect in the future, but not today. That's the suspend part.
Mm-hmm.
You keep working. And then when you retire or stop working at 67, you go back to Social Security and you say, okay, now I'm ready for my benefits. That allows you to grandfather yourself in to all the current options that are available on social. Great question, Katie. Thanks for calling into the show. You're listening to Money Matters. Find me in the Money Matters.